handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. I should have opened the show by saying congratulations, pick five hitters. And I think a lot of people hit, and the returns at both Indiana and at Canterbury were really, I mean, the Canterbury number was bizarre. It's so big. It $2,866 with three favorites and two third choices. Nothing over $1,180. It unbelievable. Yeah, you know, Mr. Jägermeister, who the wonderful Valerie Lund veteran, won that 10,000 lakes and paid $440. So, you know, you could say to yourself, well, it's almost a, and I know some people, you know, didn't think that he was automatic, but, you know, it's still a fairly easy way to start the sequence. And actually the same thing happened at Indiana. A $4.20 winner, that sharp prospect coming back for Joe Sharp. And I was uncertain. I picked him, but I didn't think he was absolutely a stone cold lock. The one that everybody used in Indiana was that Hungarian Princess that, you know, made it a bit of a, you know, a pick four. And if you had a lot of confidence in sharp prospect, it becomes a pick three. Unbelievable. So let me run them down. And we'll start with Indiana. 420 for sharp prospect, the favorite. Third choice paid 980 in the second leg. That was that AE horse, Jeff the Runner. And when I wrote the thing up, I can't remember now if Bill mentioned him, being an AE, but Jeff the Runner got in because Strong Words scratched. And it became obvious to me that was a major player in that maiden race in the second leg. So get started, no problem, two for two. And then you had Hungarian Princess, and she won, you know, as she pleased. So 220. So pretty much, I got to think, you know, if you were able to realize that Jeff the Runner was in the race, and that happens, you know, sometimes you don't see the AE until it's too late, but, you know, if you were savvy to that point, you were three for three. Then came the two tough horses. And it's not that Sky Judge was so tough to come up with. Sky Judge was the third choice, paid $11.20 in the Sagamore Sire stake for the boys. I was trying to keep the ticket down a little bit, and I thought that Bets Down, Let's Ride, and Sudden Shift, I just thought they were such strong A's that, you know, I thought they were overwhelmingly likely, and frankly, neither ran much. I mean, they both were just blech. And Sky Judge under Mojica for Merrill Roberts was strong. Good performance. Pays $11.20. And that gets you to the nightcap. And so I'm knocked out because Sky Judge, I didn't even use Sky Judge as a C. And frankly, even if I had, he was my fourth choice, but even if I'd used him as a C, I still would have gotten beat in the nightcap personally because I needed, this was rough. That Roland with Olin, who took money. Roland with Olin took money. It was 12-1 morning line. And having gotten knocked out, you know, I played Roland with Olin, got bet down in half, 6-1 by the time the gates opened. And I thought I was going to cash a nice ticket. And here comes Alfalfa, an alpha New York bred that John Kimmel partly bred and is owned by our friends. Avi and Rhoda Friedberg, congratulations to them. And unbelievable. Alfalfa gets the head and neck down under Jermaine Bridgemahan, paid $15, and kind of fun. And afterward, I just was shaking my head. Say, look at this. And this is a horse that they've had out in the Midwest, a 5-year-old gelding that started the career in New York, broke the maiden at Aqueduct turf sprinting, and is solid. A solid, 80 buyer type, and has found a home, it seems, in the Midwest. So wins the allowance nightcap, and anybody that negotiated the sequence, it had over $400,000 to it. $1,306 was your reward at Indiana. Indiana yesterday, by the way, $3.2 million in handle on a Wednesday. That got everybody at that point. The dust starts to settle. They ran a couple of quarter horse races, and attention was turning simultaneously to Shakopee. And the sequence here, as mentioned, Mr. Jägermeister, as Vic might say, straight and strong, and just romped, and pays $440 to start things off. And that hypnotic rhythm for Valerie Lund, the old Valerie Lund daily double that you hear so much about. Maybe a turf paradise. Hypnotic rhythm was 5-1, essentially. Third choice. And confidently handled by Fuentes. So they pair up back-to-back. And then you had the favorite, Double Bee Sting for Tony Regensdorf. And Q, Alonzo Quinones, paid $760. Hell of the North, the favorite, took money. It was 8-1 morning line. It got bet down. Burnell Roan and Dean Butler, $7. And it gets you to the nightcap. And if you looked at the will pays, I mean, they were crazy. They were absolutely crazy. And Derby Code, third choice in the nightcap for Mac Robertson. And that was, what, his fifth win of the day? Fourth or fifth? I lost track. I think it was his fourth. Yeah, I think he won four yesterday. Unbelievable. And the money had poured in. They were hoping for five times the carry, and they got it. $653,000 in that pool. It paid $2,866. I mean, just a crazy pay. The parlay was $400. Paid seven times the parlay. It was crazy. Just crazy. Great day of racing in the Midwest, Indiana Grand, and Canterbury Park. And I'm telling you, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the new Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I don't know. Come up with your own with your own connection. It was really fun yesterday, and I was just kind of following along at Canterbury because Gus had done it, and I had done Indiana, and I was out. I grilled actually yesterday. It's been gorgeous here, and so I had the laptop out on the back patio, and a little steak for Tina, a little burger for me, and I'm watching. And I got a grill problem, actually. The grill, the plate where I use charcoal only, and the adjustable plate that goes up and down with the crank, it's rusted and it's bowing. And I don't know. I'm going to have to see if I can't replace that bottom plate. Yeah. I'm a little. I don't know why you get attached to your grill if you're a. And I'm not a great. I am not that slick when it comes to the grilling, but you just you kind of get used to its nuances, right? I don't know why I'm reflecting on affection for my grill, but I think it may. Tina, I told Tina about it this morning. She said, "We'll throw it out. Get a new one. We'll get a new one." I said, whoa. Easy. She's ready to throw anything out. I came back from Baltimore, and we got a bun pour over coffee maker. You know, the bun's the best, and the bun family is in racing. Ian Wilkes trades for him, and she says it's taking forever. It's all something's wrong. It's not working anymore. Okay. When the coffee when your coffee brewer starts to go, you know, trickle slow, it's almost always because there's calcium buildup inside. So I take the little thing that they give you, a little bendable poker that you shove up inside the coffee pot from where the water comes out. And that seemed to break up some of the calcium, but it still was not great. So I got a jug of vinegar and ran vinegar through it for an hour, like five cycles of vinegar. And all of a sudden, you know, out comes all the limestone. And now it's working like new. But she was ready to throw it out. You know, is that right? I mean, come on. You give it a chance. Not throwing it out the first sign of, you know. What kind of attitude is that? Right, Case? Casey's had to send out the board for rebuild, right? Casey, last week when the board shorted out, you didn't throw the board out. You brought the other one back that was rebuilt itself, actually, and send the other one out to get it refurbished again. Come on. couple of things. I'm off into a tangent here. Today, actually, is the first day. Honestly, it's the first day. I don't feel, exhausted and run down and run out. Part of it is the realization that you don't have to go somewhere. Thank God Belmont, that this Triple Crown is not, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. Because I don't know if I could go down to New York on Sunday and spend the week. The realization that there's 2 weeks at home before going down to New York, it feels better. I was complaining to Tina. She said, well, you're not as young as you used to be. Thank you, honey. What a nice thing to say. a couple of things here. And Dick Powell is going to join us in a few minutes. And I told you yesterday that Dick, and see what Dick thought of Preakness. And we'll get some update on, I think I've got the, where's the, where's my, I have, I've got the weekend action from Shut In. We'll talk HK, JC with Dick. Joe Besseker is going to join us, and I'm looking forward to this. And not only am I looking forward to a conversation with Joe, I've never had on, certainly have acknowledged, his winning horses over the years. But, just when it seemed like he was liquidating his, right, he had the dispersal, next thing you know, he buys two dozen horses the last couple of days at Timonium. So we'll find out what Joe's thinking is and what he thinks of, basically he, with his checkbook, he told you what he thinks of some of the new sires. Bought a Practical Joke and paid $425 for a Gormley, so you get an idea. But even better than that, it turns out that Joe is an Eagles fan. So now we're going to root openly for Joe Besseker's horses, and he sent me a image of one of his first two-year-olds that he named. He named one for Brian Dawkins, B-Doc. How great is that? So between Will Schwartz, you know, who's busy naming horses after eagles, and now former eagles, and now Joe Besseker. So, you know, this is, everybody knows, this is a bird, this is a birds friendly environment. So Joe Besseker is going to join us. We'll get to Tony. We'll get to Tony Black. And I didn't think of it until now, but Tony, regarding Tony, the situation in Maryland where I saw where, you know, they're going to be using Timonium as a training center. Everybody kind of shifting from Laurel, basically right now, Pimlico and Timonium are going to handle the training. So I want to get an update and some of the details on that. But Tony, you know, seeing Tony's name made me think of that. We'll talk to Tom Law and or Joe Clancy as well. We'll get their take. Of course, we had them together last week, which was fun. I got to catch up with Seth Merrow. And Seth, by the way, gave out the Indiana pick five. Gave out, I think, on a fairly modest ticket, too. I want to say in the $54 range, and maybe a little bit more. And Rachel McLaughlin did, too. So it was accessible. Now I feel bad that we didn't get Seth on yesterday. Seth could have handed you that, you know, better than I did, certainly. Than my try, and we'll try to get to Rich Eng. And before we do anything else, before Dick joins us, and I'm sure, I hope Dick's listening in, because maybe he'll comment, this morning, as we continue to appreciate, you know, great Preaknesses of the past that are now in part of history, today, May 20th, one of the best Preaknesses, not just best Preaknesses ever, one of the best Triple Crown races ever, and many people will say, in their experience, the best Triple Crown race ever. There's people who, particularly if you were there, or if you saw it live, wherever, at any racetrack or on TV, Sunday Silence, an easy goer, round two, 2 weeks after Derby, where Sunday Silence wins by a couple of lengths. They come back and engage in an unbelievable, just an unbelievable, not just stretch run. There were things going on earlier in terms of the way in which, you know, and Pat Day, you know, to this day continues to take criticism about, you know, what some perceive as an early, you know, mid backstretch move, but I've never really subscribed to that per se. It's not like, you know, it's not like Easy Goer didn't have his head in front, you know, at different portions of the stretch. You know, they just ding donged, and Sunday Silence prevails simply. Of course, 3 weeks later, I was there for Belmont. I wasn't at Preakness, but I certainly was at Belmont, and because wasn't going to miss an opportunity to see. I was a huge, my buddy Phil and I were huge Easy Goer fans, and New York's Easy Goer would quash the Triple Crown storyline. I put up some great photos, and like a half a dozen photos, and the link to the race, which we're going to hear now. And you get the this is actually the, I know Trevor Denman was on the mic on the racetrack. Dave Johnson, this is the Dave Johnson call on TV. Then you'll, right at the end, we'll probably let it run a couple of seconds afterward, and you'll hear Jim McKay and Charles C. Canty, and they banter, and then they bring P-Val on, you know, the horseback mic, and he thinks he he won. It seemed pretty clear live that, you know, I don't know why they were, you know, why there was so much drama. But here you go. 32 years ago today, Sunday Silence, Easy Go or Pimlico, the Preakness.
Quickly jumps to the lead. Houston on the outside in second. Dancil between them third. Northern Wolf on the outside is fourth. And Sunday Silence is right there and now fourth, moving up between horses. Passing the stands for the first time. Northern Wolf takes the lead by a head. Houston with Cordero on the inside, saving ground in second. Pulverizing is dropped back to be third. Then on the outside is Sunday Silence fourth. Easy Goer on the outside is fifth at this point. 3.5 lengths off the lead. Larry Snyder with Dancil at the rail is next. Then comes Rock Point. And 3 lengths back to the trailer, Hawkster, who is 15 lengths off the leader, who is now Houston as they move on to the backstretch. The first quarter in 23 2/5 seconds. It's fast, but not that fast. Down the backstretch, Houston with Cordero leading the pack by 3 lengths. Northern Wolf is second. And now the Kentucky Derby winner. On the outside, Sunday Silence takes second. And here comes Easy Goer with a quick move on the outside with Pat Day. It's Houston in front by a head. Easy Goer, the favorite, up to challenge. Sunday Silence between horses in tight quarters there. Back into third. Dancil is fourth. Northern Wolf fifth. Rock Point on the outside. Sixth. Pulverizing has had it. He's back to seventh. And Hawkster hasn't started to run. Midway on the turn. Dancil on the outside to the front. On the outside, here comes Sunday Silence to challenge. Now they're heads apart. Sunday Silence with Pat Valenzuela takes the lead at the quarter pole. Easy Goer back into second position. Coming on third in the stretch. On the outside, it's Sunday Silence. On the inside, Easy Goer. And down the stretch they come. On the outside, it's Sunday Silence. Easy Goer with Pat Day. Back to challenge. Heads apart. Easy Goer on the inside with a slight lead. On the outside, Sunday Silence. The rest of them far back. Here's the finish of the Preakness. Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. Photo finish. Noses apart. I can't tell. But on the outside, Sunday Silence with Pat Valenzuela. He's waving his. Who will try to make it two steps to the Triple Crown, or Easy Goer at the rail with Pat Day. What a finish!
Dave, we have seen the race that everybody wanted to see here today. Two magnificent colts battling out head-to-head, nose-to-nose, down the stretch. Who won it? If I had to make a guess, I would say Sunday Silence on the outside, but hold all your tickets because that is a pure guess. There's Pat Valenzuela. He did wave his whip. Charlie Whittingham isn't sure. No, I don't think he's sure.
Wants to be.
But it's going to be a little bit of a wait till the photo. There's Shug McGahee. They're both going to go down the, towards the winner's circle, just in case. 153-4. We did not get the track record or stakes record that we thought might be achieved here this afternoon.
It wasn't for lack of running, Jim. 3/4 and 109-2, and these two colts hooked up and ding-dong through the stretch. I believe Sunday Silence probably got the nod. A really game performance. I mean, this was a stretch finish written in Hollywood.
There it is, and Charles. He's talking to Pat there, and McKay asked him, "Do you think you won?" He said, "I think so. I think I did." And then he goes back to him, and Pat says, "I'm almost sure." And it's funny because live, and even on the replay, that they I know that upstairs, when you go, I'm just thinking about the press box, and there's a catwalk outside the press box that, you know, that goes further up the stretch, because the press box itself is probably even between the eighth pole and the 16th pole. And so there's this long catwalk that takes you over to the crow's nest, where the booths are. And I've been in there. Dave Rodman a couple of years ago when Dave did a visit with Dave, and I've heard people say, and I can't remember if I ever asked them about, you know, the perspective. So it could be that the angle live is a little tougher to tell than, you know, than what we see on TV. I mean, that happens a lot. So. one of the greatest races, and of course it's enhanced by, you know, knowing what goes afterward, you know, what comes later between the two of them, including the Belmont and then later the Breeders' Cup. Dick Powell joining us. Dick, where were you for that one?
I was home watching on TV. I had just gotten into horse racing professionally the year before and started doing television and radio. Huge Sunday Silence fan, despite being on the East Coast. So we won the Derby. No shock there. And then this race, he was brilliant despite being cut off at the half-mile pole. Comes back, and no one ran the turn better than Sunday Silence. I mean, he was just brilliant around the turns. And that always gave him a big advantage, that he could just open up on the turn and race for the stretch. And in this case, he had to use the turn to catch up to Easy Goer. But I thought Sunday Silence was, I know in East Coast and New York, not a popular opinion, but he was the best horse. He was 3-for-3 on neutral tracks. He lost to Belmont when the Naira track superintendent basically did everything he could to get the water out of that track, because it had poured rain all night, and that would have benefited Sunday Silence. So, yes, Easy Goer did beat him in the Belmont. He did have a rabbit from Calumet Farm, the Voyageur, which everyone forgets about. But he beat him that day. Never raced him in California, which was theoretically going to happen as a four-year-old when there was a series of races being proposed at four, which never took place. And Sunday Silence beat him back on neutral ground in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Gulfstream. But I was a huge Sunday Silence fan. So when I'm getting 4-1 instead of 2-1 because of all the Easy Goer money, I was quite happy.
Well, you're not gonna get me to echo those sentiments, because I was a mammoth Easy Goer fan, starting as a 2-year-old, and I just wasn't. That actually is the period where I started going really regularly, and I'd kind of circled back to the Northeast by then, after living in Cincinnati and Kansas City and Charlotte, so I was able to start on a regular basis going to things, and there's so much, Dick, from that from that period that that I associate with Easy Goer, going to watch him run. And, then latching on to other horses, including Gopher Wand and Mr. Nickerson. I became a huge fan of Mr. Nickerson. He seemed to show up on every undercard when there was whatever feature Easy Goer was on. There was Mr. Nickerson running in the Boojum and races like that for Mark Reed.
It was a great rivalry. It just brought racing to the front page, and it was exciting and dramatic, and lived up to the anticipation. The Breeders' Cup Classic, that tension and drama before the race was just palpable. It's just waiting for them to get in the gate, and then they finally do, and the race is an all-time great race. Just they were both sensational. And as I've mentioned before, and people don't like hearing this either, the dopey American breeders let Sunday Silence go to Japan. Arthur Hancock couldn't even syndicate it in America. So we lost one of the real breed-changing stallions because of the presence of Halo, and Halo because of the female family with Alma Mood crosses perfectly with all the Northern Dancer blood. So had he stayed in America, I think he would have done just as well in America as he did in Japan, but that is not the case. So we lost a great stallion, and he's had a huge impact, including a deep impact on Japanese breeding.
Right.
And just, and then there was another anniversary yesterday, Steve, another big upset in the Preakness, 1984. Gate Dancer beats
Gate
Quail
Dancer.
On May 19th, excuse me. But the even bigger upset that day was Dick Powell went and got married that day.
Oh, how about that? And happy anniversary.
And an even bigger upset. They're still married 37 years later. Now, what odds could you have gotten back then?
That's great. Happy anniversary. And that's great. I'll never forget it. May 19th, 1984.
Yeah, Gate Dancer beat Swale, and I got married.
Were you able to, of course, there was, you know, you had to go to the bar maybe
I thought I would be able to, and it was a small affair, and I was not able to watch the race. So we were not off to a good start, as you might say.
That's funny. That is funny. Yeah, Gate Dancer, 5-1 almost, and Swale. I didn't realize, I was looking at this, Swale was 4-5.
Yeah, he's dominant in the Derby. Heavy favorite in the Preakness. Somber note yesterday.
Yeah.
Paul Mooney, one of the all-time great stand-up comic writers. Not for everybody. Not everyone really knows who he was or anything else, but Paul Mooney was just absolutely brilliantly funny, brutal comedy. It was in-your-face type comedy. Just fantastic work with Richard Pryor all those years. It's just, and he passed away. And then later in the day, one of my athletic idols, Lee Evans, 1968 400-meter champion, world record holder, passes away in Oakland, California. Lee was in Nigeria. Paul was in Oakland, even though Lee was known for being from that part of the country. But Lee Evans dies also later in the day, so it's like, man, I didn't want to check the internet or do anything yesterday. That was two bad ones.
I'm glad you mentioned Mooney. I saw him passing, and the Lee Evans, I was not aware. I missed that. Part of a famously important Olympic, kind of a heavy racial overtone, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, the 68 Olympics were run in October, and it was right on top of the indoor track season that year. And I would go to the Melrose Games every year and one or two other track meets at Madison Square Garden or the 168th Street Armory. So the Melrose Games that year, and the big event besides the 1 minute mile, was the 600 yards. And Lee was just the dominant quarter mile in the world. But Martin McGrady from Central State in Ohio was the chairman of the boards. And Martin was almost unbeatable at 600 yards. It's an odd distance. Indoors, it's about three laps. And Lee comes in off of the world record, off of the gold medal in the 4x4 relay, and Martin McGrady beat him in the 600 yards, 107 and change. I mean, went to the front. And McGrady was a tall, long strider, but he just loved indoor track. And outdoors, he was never at that level. But indoors, he was just impossible. So Lee couldn't even beat him when he was in all-time great shape. And Martin was the chairman of the boards back then. That was a lot of fun. I used to go to all those track meets and just enjoyed them all. But Lee Evans passes, Paul Mooney passes.
Oh, thank you, Dick. I want to, when you mentioned the armory, you made me think of something else to ask you about a passing. I don't know if you've been able to hear the show the last couple of days, but had both Len Friedman and John Hardoon to pay tribute to Len Ragazin. And what's your experience with the sheets and, you know, having seen the advent of them, really in paralleling, you know, your time around the game?
I had some friends who were big sheet players, and one of them, I would drive down to Harriman, which, if you're not from around here, which is basically you go down the thruway, and before you get into Westchester, Tappan Zee Bridge, we would meet there. He would be coming from a different direction. We would drive into the city somewhere around 14th or 15th Street, and there'd be a church basement or something.
Yep, yep,
where.
Yep. Yeah.
And they would have the Ragazin breed. This was the Breeders' Cup seminar, and Len Friedman would conduct it. And Len mentioned Ragazin's politics, which I don't think he did justice to him how extreme his politics were, as were mine. So you go there, and all you see are Bolsheviks. It's just funny as could be. Occasionally you see someone in a suit and a tie, but it was quite a slice of New York City West Side life. So I would go to those with Peter. And when I worked for NYRA, Ragazin had a seminar in the picnic area.
Yes.
And it was conducted by Bob Banish. So what I would do is I would get the scratches from the race office before they were announced on the loudspeaker. So maybe 10:30, quarter 11, I would have them and always walk over to that seminar and bring the scratches to them, which they thought was just the greatest thing in the world. Here's someone who actually works for a racetrack looking out for customers. This is unheard of. So I had a good relationship with Bob Banish, and I would sit and listen. And I don't like going to those things because, to me, you know, then if you're not buying the product, then you're just lurking and trying to pick up on something. Who did you like? And it really should be for the people who bought them and exchanging views and everything. But it was always fascinating, whether it was the Ragazin stuff back then or Jerry Brown's Thoroughgraph seminars and things like that. I just like, after I have my work done and published, I like going on and then seeing what other people like and what they looked at and what they deemed important and things like that. So with Ragazin just taking this number, but then graphically portraying it, and I think it was Len, I think I heard Len Friedman yesterday, and he was basically saying we're comparing the horse to itself. And then we're plotting it so that you can see how this horse is doing compared to its other races and make a projection as to how it's going to do today. And that was revolutionary.
Yep.
In handicapping, and clearly the people that were involved early on had a massive edge. That was And then obviously very colorful people. I absolutely loved. I don't know if Len told this. I think he did. The lamp with the tape all over it. And if you were friends with him, you wouldn't buy him another lamp. You'd buy him more tape. I just that got to me. I laughed my head off when I heard that.
What's amazing.
And the image in my head is Proposition Joe on Baltimore, you know, having an appliance store that he conducted all his business out of in the wire. And Omar would go in there with a clock, and he actually wanted the clock fixed, and Proposition Joe actually was capable of fixing the clock. So you're in this. So that's kind of how your mind works when you hear these things. But yeah, but don't buy him a new lamp, buy him more tape.
That's tremendous. No, it was fun, even under the circumstances. And look, 92, and in fact, both of the parties that were appreciated the last couple of days, Josh Pons, in regards to Malibu Moon, and Josh reminded me of the way Suge, whenever I reach out to Suge for thoughts when you know some of his trainees, his Hall of Fame runners, when they pass, and we've had a number of those, and he always is stoic and says, "Listen, it's part of what you expect," and you know, and that's the way, you know, that's the way Len and John Hardoon talked about, you know, 92-year-old Len Ragazin and Josh even at 24, even though that, you know, that's the shorter end of you know, life probability for a thoroughbred. They can go into their 30s, into their early 30s. But, you know, he had a tremendous influence. And the influence, in fact, going to talk to Joe Besseker next. Joe's got a Gormley. He's got a $400,000 Gormley from the sale, and that's the one that's named after Brian Dawkins. We're going to talk to Joe about that. So the Malibu Moon's influence and Len Ragazin's influence will continue. Dick Powell with us. Dick, let's do some recapping and some HKJC previewing.
Okay, the recapping, a couple of themes. Number one, favorites have been just coming in unlike any other time during the season. They're 27 out of 56. 3 out of 9 yesterday at Happy Valley, which is more than normal. And Perth has been rated usually good to firm. If you see my weekly update sheet, it's almost always green because the running times are faster than standard time in almost all the races. So the Perth's been firm. The times have been very fast. We had a new course record of 54.68 for 1,000 meters. Now, that doesn't sound that fast when you see Gulfstream and other American tracks that run at 5 furlongs, but this is from a standing start. There's no run-up here. So these horses are running awfully fast over the track. Now, last Sunday, last race of the day at Sha Tin, I really recommend you go back and watch this race. Fantastic Treasure, who is now 5-for-5, breaks towards the back of the field, was ninth early, down on the inside, starts picking up horses, weaves in, weaves out, finally seizes the lead in the stretch, holds off the closes, completes the 7 furlongs in 120.28. Fastest time of the year, faster than even Golden 60, ran his 1,400 meters. And Fantastic Treasure is another one of these undefeated three-year-olds that we're just dying to see next year. Now, one of the undefeated three-year-olds already this year is Courier Wonder. And Courier Wonder will be in this Sunday morning, fourth race, the Sha Tin Baz, a Group 3 sprint. He's going to move up in class. For the first time, he is 4-for-4, and he's won his races basically in hand, decent margins. He's gone. I give you a quick comparison. Courier Wonder, they all started at a 52. He went 66, 80, 88. Now he's rated 100 for this race. Golden 60, who's the horse of the year in Hong Kong and one of the top horses in the world, last year, he started out 52, 62, 68, 75, got beat, came back at 75. So he didn't get up to these big numbers until much later. Fantastic Treasure is now already up to 94. Fantastic Treasure probably done for this season, though, but at least we get to see Courier Wonder one more time this Saturday night, Sunday morning, going 6 furlongs. The only negative with that as John Sides has indicated, he's going to keep them sprinting. With Fantastic Treasure having already won a couple of times at Seven Furlongs, he will definitely stretch out next year and will at least try the first leg of the four-year-old Classic Series. So two really exciting horses coming along to take the place of, the attrition rate of horses getting older and starting to go to the sidelines and things like that. We have our last Group 1 stake race of the season, Race 8, the Standard Chater and Champions Cup. It's a mile and a half. It has Exultant, who will probably be the favorite. He's definitely the high weight. And Russian Emperor is back. Now, Russian Emperor really disappointed last two starts before. He only lost by a head, so it wasn't that disappointing. But last time out, he just ran really poorly in a Group 3 that it looked like he laid over. He got beat by Butterfield. Butterfield's in the race today. But I think Russian Emperor will bounce back. They're taking the blinkers off. They're adding a shadow roll. So Doug White is doing some equipment changes with him. He still has to make up some rating points with Exultant, Glorious Dragon, Columbus County. But we know the son of Galileo has just phenomenal talent. I think mile and a half is his distance. I think he can sit a nice trip with Alexi Bedell. He's drew to seven, so he won't be stuck on the rail. He'll probably be, one path over, get a nice trip, and I think he'll be able to show his best side. Unfortunately, he probably will be the favorite, but we'll see. But he's number four in race number eight, the last Group 1 of the season. That leaves us with two or three Group 3s to finish up the Hong Kong season. We're now up to meeting 74 of an 88-week season. So 12:30 a.m. post time, East Coast time, Sunday. 11 races all on the turf. Yesterday, Zach Purton won the first race. Then he did something to his back and missed the rest of the card. Joe Moreira won five races yesterday, so Joe has opened up. Zach had cut it to 13 after race one, but now the margin is back up to 18. And John Size has the lead in the trainer standings over Casper Fans, who was 0-21. So Cass had that big start, and then he's had a couple of slumps in between. So problem with this kind of racing is you have to move up in class, and if you're moving up in, you're either moving up in class or you're moving up in weight. So either way, winning horses get penalized in handicap racing. So when you have a bunch of winners, they're using up opportunities. So John Cass has to regroup. I'm sure he will, and he still has plenty of time to the end of the season to see if he can win the premiership. But another big weekend coming up at Sha Tin, and we'll be back at Happy Valley next Wednesday for the normal schedule.
Nice. All right.
So go back and watch that last race from Sunday, Fantastic Treasure. It's a fun race to watch because when you're watching it, you're like, well, where is this horse? How does he win? And he ran his last six furlongs in 106. I think it was 106.3. So, I mean, he's just motoring, but not out in the clear. He's motoring down in the inside, weaving in and out. So it was visually impressive and fast to seven for a long time. I mean, so well worth watching again.
Dick, I appreciate it. This was fun. And on to Belmont. We didn't really get a Preakness thought in, but we'll...
Like everybody else, I ran second. I like Midnight Bourbon. He got over that. He ran a nice second. Ron Bauer, I could see him. I just couldn't see him off that Bluegrass. If you gave me a better excuse as to why he was beating 5 lengths in the Bluegrass, maybe. I did like the rest. I did like the workouts coming in. So he had to run his A game. I just didn't know if his A game was good enough. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those that's what makes it fun. And I kind of was kicking myself too afterward, because I think about, you know, those extra 2 weeks and everything that went into it, and think about Michael McCarthy and you know, his preparedness, and there were some hints, no doubt.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Dick, I appreciate it. Catch up next week.
Steve, thanks. Take care.
Hong Kong Jockey Club, everybody, HKJC Racing on Twitter and HKJC.com. It's all there for you, the form guide. It was all there for Joe Besseker, who joins us now. And I've been looking forward to this, and now even more so that he's named the $400,000 Gormley. He's named it after Brian Dawkins. That only gilds the lily. But, you know, Joe, for a guy that was dispersing, you seem to buy a lot of horses on Monday and Tuesday. Good morning.
Hello?
Joe.
Yep.
There we go. Joe, I was kidding. I was saying, you know, for a guy that was involved in dispersing, you sure bought a lot of horses Monday and Tuesday.
Well, it's like this. First of all, it was I feel good for Fasig. It was a hell of a sale.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back a little bit. If you read about when I dispersed, I had gotten up to a pretty. In 2019, I won 200 races that year as an individual. That's pretty doggone good, I think. Close to $5 million in. There were multiple reasons I dispersed. It's been written about and whatever. Probably the overriding reason was my father had passed August 4th, and he had been recovering he had a brain tumor. And so during his recovery, he was watching a lot. He watched my horses more than I did. And so that when my father passed, it left a little bit of a hole, and there were some other issues as well. I'm sure you discussed them on your show. I'm a little bit critical of the business that I love so much, because and we're starting to see the issues of that come forward. We've got some problems with our business, and you know, there's no voice even for somebody like myself that runs as many horses as I do. There's really no voice for us. There's no voice to get changes, to get some standardization and whatnot. So there was some frustration built up, but it's in my blood, it's in my DNA, and I heard you talking. It's also like my Eagles. They're in my blood and my DNA. And so, and if you watched, it's not buying horses. I stepped out of my box in a big way. I'm a middle market guy, maybe high, you know, low end to high middle. And for me to buy a horse for that amount of money is way, way, way out of my sandbox. So, but I'm excited.
I had zero
buyer's remorse, by the way, on B-Doc. It's bad to fall in love with a horse, as I said. It's like the worst thing you could ever do. I try to keep this as kind of a business, but this horse was special to the consigner, Robert Brewer. It's the most he ever spent on a horse. It's the most, by a long shot, I've ever spent on a horse. And this horse, you never know. You just don't know. But, boy, is it exciting. This horse is one badass, I'm telling you. And I spent some time with him. And Sunday night when we were looking at him, started to rain. So we were underneath, and I was watching him. They kept pulling him out and pulling him off. He's just a badass. And the guy Brewer's Barn were all Cowboys fans, and that almost made me not buy him. And but I told him if I was lucky enough to get this horse, there was never a bigger badass in Eagle history than Brian Dawkins. And this horse, if he lives up to his namesake, we're going to be very happy.
Well, and who's he going to?
He's going to Doug O'Neill. Doug is one of my favorite people in all of racing. Dennis O'Neill looked at them, loved them. There's everybody kind of did. I have a process where I use, I think you've talked or know Mike Mulligan and his breeding show stuff, Mike Riccio, Dennis O'Neill loved them. I do it in a collaborative way. I believe in the three Ps. If you have the right process and then you have the right people, you get performance. And that's been a very good very good for us. I heard you talking about the sheets before. You know, I've been a sheet user forever. And I know I think you're particularly aligned with Thoragraphs. And the Thoragraph is better for me, not just the numbers, but all the other information that you can glean. From you know, and that has a big bearing on it. So, you know, I use this team. So, and then Clovis Crane, I sold three through Clovis, and I got number seven was my hip, and I got a pretty good amount of money for number seven, and that gave me the extra juice to stand up and be counted when it came to B-Dog.
How about that?
The horse arrived at Blue Water today, which is the Levy family, Meg Levy, down in Kentucky.
Sure.
And he's going to the horsey spa for a month. Nothing wrong with him other than the fact, you know, this is a May fall, May 21st. So, wow. You know, for him to do what he did and look this good as a May fall, you know, it's just, look, hope springs eternal, and we're very excited.
And I was gonna ask actually on that topic. I mean, you look at this roster of purchases, and you bought 23 horses for $1.2 million, $1,243,000.
Don't tell my wife, right?
I don't think anything stops that.
You're right about that. My kids, I'm not on social media, but somehow my kid who follows has my name. So this comes up on a tweet, and of course my son didn't know enough not to tell my wife, so she knows. We haven't had the discussion yet, but it's coming.
Well, and what's interesting is you really bought a wide variety of horses, and this represents these 23 two-year-olds. I'm going to guess that's the most in a single season that you've gone into a campaign with, basically replacing
a lot
of that stock.
By far and away, there's a reason for this. We're building a little platform, which probably on another time we can talk. I can talk to you about. We have a concept. You know what I do for a living? I'm a money manager, and we manage small and mid cap growth here at Emerald, and so I have this concept, and I'm probably at some point going to try to put them in this new concept of tokenization. I don't know if you're aware of any of that, but we could talk about that another time. But and I will get, but the partners that I get won't be traditional partners. It won't be like myracehorse.com, but it won't be like the two or three people partners. It'll be, I'm not sure yet. We're working on it actually as we speak. But, I'm just not in the business. I typically make fun of people. Well, make fun's not the right word. I question the people that spend a lot of money, like many hundreds of thousands, $1 million on a horse, because it's very, very, very difficult. You have to be really right to get your money back, right?
Yep.
But in this particular case, and if, by the way, if you look at, even with that big horse, if you look at the range that I bought the horse, the average was just around 52,000 or something.
Yep.
So
54.
That skewed it a little bit high. That's my sweet spot, the middle market.
The obvious reference to that equation is that there's strength in numbers, that it's a numbers game, essentially.
So a year or two before, people laughed at me when I bought 31 yearlings at a sale that in Timonium was horrific. This sale was the complete opposite of the sale today. This was a horrific sale. And out of that, I got Levda, Laddie Liam, Mine Not Mine. They were part of the big dispersal. So we did extremely well on that. So there is strength in numbers. Think of it like as a diversified portfolio of stocks, okay? And if you do your research on all of them, not everything's going to work, but if you have that right process and the right people, hopefully you'll get performance on enough of them that portfolio will work out for you. It's a lot different than the stock market in that these things are living, breathing creatures that need taken care of. But the concept is still the same. And we did deploy one other thing I think that is interesting, at least it was for us. I made a decision the night before that when I looked at our lists and what horses were on the list, we had a prevalence of horses that we liked early in the sale, and like in the first 60 hips. And interestingly enough, and I don't know why Maryland didn't take this into account, a lot of the local trainers couldn't be to the sale early because they were moving their horse stock from Laurel to Pimlico or Delaware. They were all coming, but they were coming later. Each trainer brings with four or five buyers, right, you know, their team. So we were taking, say, 30 or 40% of the potential buyers out early because they had to do their day job. So from a strategical point of view, that's what we decided we were going to try to strike early, especially every horse sale. People kind of sit on their hands a little to get a feel for the sale. So we just acted early and strong and kind of like a poker game. We tried to get the big stack so we could, you know, take advantage of it. And that's kind of what we did. And I'm really excited. I think we did very well. I'm very excited as you look through the portfolio. And I just wanted to throw this out. I heard you were excited about the B-Dawg name. It's my one of my favorite eagles ever, and I am too. But if you want, for your audience, if you want, since I have 23 to name, if I could throw, you know, I could throw a number of million, if we could have a little contest with your viewers to name them, that'd be fun.
That'd be a riot. And in fact, I want to touch on the variety that, you know, that you ended up taken home, and it includes an American Freedom, who seems to be hot among the new sires that didn't come in with a lot of publicity. You bought an Astern filly, a Can the Man filly, a Central Banker filly, a Classic Empire filly for 70.
The Classic Empire filly, they tell me, is special. They thought that they were going to get a lot more. You know, I think the horse, the horse did go in a pretty good time. It's just sometimes, let's see, who did I get? I got that one from Harris Training. But even Nick Demerick and the Tom's Ready that I got. I couldn't get a breeding season to it for my broodmares. I got a Mohaman.
Yep, a filly. 18,000. That was Clovis.
The Mohaman, yeah. Yep, and so I've seen the horse. For a long time, I think the horse is really strong. Is it going to be a graded stakes winner? Maybe not, but I think it could be pretty good.
And what's your philosophy on the filly and colt scenario?
It's a good question. Well, let's point out one. I, for two races, owned a horse by the name of Motherload Hipster. It was one of my favorite. Todd Beatty owned it, and I claimed it from him, and then this is a funny story. So I claimed it from Todd at Penn, had it for, I believe, two races, maybe one, and then after we won our race, we had to expose it again, and then he took it back and then just took her out of racing and bred her, and then I bought the Holy Boss out of that. I'm pretty excited about this filly, and you know, there is a little emotional tie with Motherload Hipster, who I loved. This horse, Motherload Hipster, despised horses going by her. And one race, it wasn't when I owned her, she's the type of filly, she'd try to reach over and bite somebody when they tried to go by. So she would have her ears pinned back. She was just a hard-knocking son of a gun. And the Holy Boss that I got there kind of reminded me of her. So on a filly side, I like a little bit. Look, here's my other theory. And these are just theories. They're worth the paper they're written on, really. But I do have theories. I do have plans and everything I do. If the mayor has something that we could fall back on with some residual value, that's a good thing. Because if you can win a couple races, and I have, you know, I have bought or obtained breeding rights, mostly regional, then if it doesn't work out, you know, you might be able to have, and if they have live families, you may be able to recover something. But every sire in the world was a good horse, or else it wouldn't be a sire. Yep. You know, you could have your favorites, or whatever, but they were decent racehorses, and somebody thought enough to make them a sire. So I spend a lot of time on the female on the dam side. Now, I'm not nearly as talented as the people you have on your program, but I have my own kind of things that I look for.
Sure.
And I use, you know, my history of looking at races all the time and the female sides that I like. So I concentrate more on that and let the sire power kind of take care of itself. And, you know, we all have our favorites on the sires. And I heard you mention, I'm excited about Gormley. Every Gormley I've seen has been really a standout. And I bought another Gormley early in the second day, and then number 417, I believe, was a Gormley. The guy, the consigner, Chris Seal, had one horse there, one horse. It was this Gormley, and he ended up getting more for his Gormley than we did for the one we bought, but I clearly like mine better.
Well,
But I couldn't buy two of them at that price. Shouldn't have bought one of them at that price, but that's another story.
That was the that was Hip 417, that went on the second day for $450.
$450, and the horse was really nice and it vetted, and God bless. Well, did Terry Finley get that one? I don't remember. Terry was the underbidder for mine, and I actually didn't know it at the time. I don't know. I've never bid that much. Actually, that's not true. I bid $1 million on a horse one time when I knew I wasn't going to get it. It was the Green Monkey. That's another story for another time.
You were Calder that day?
I was, and what happened was is that I was walking around with my buddy Kirk Wyckoff, and I didn't, you know, the sales were kind of still, I was learning, right? And I walked around, and I don't remember if it was Hartley or Dorenzo, but the one guy, his hands were shaking. He could hardly light a cigarette. And then we said, what's the matter? He said, I just turned $5 million down for this horse. And he said, I can't believe I did that, you know. And so I was there. Kieran McLaughlin was next to me, and I was with Kirk Wyckoff, and then they bring it in, and the place was packed. And we were, like, in the third row. And so when it got, when it got to a million, I said to Kieran, I said, watch this. And it got to a million. I raised my hand up as high as you could raise a hand, and they called on me. And for like the 4 seconds they didn't get the million, whatever, I started to panic. But I just wanted to say I bid $1 million on a horse. So
that's great. That is great.
I'm in love I'm in love with the portfolio, and each one of these have an individual story. These aren't things we just buy in the back of the ring or anything like that. In the old days, you could do that, and you can still take chances on a horse, you
sure.
know, that's reasonable, that has regional breeding or anything. But they're making it so you got to really pay attention now. And so I did this at Emerald. We call our tagline is driven by research. And then really that's the same with this. We do a ton of research. I use mostly Mike Mulligan and Mike Riccio to help me out, but I'm friends with Dennis. And then when all the stars aligned and everybody liked this horse, I decided in this particular case that B-Doc was mine, and I couldn't be more excited.
Well, there's no doubt that there's others in here that are going to pan out and, you know, end up, you know, you'll look back and realize, you know, this was a value, and who knows? You know,
we don't know. They can hurt themselves. They can eat a bad banana, whatever it is. But I understand you're an Eagles fan. So at the end of the day, I was trying to come up with a name for this one. And it was either going to be Dawkins or Doc. I don't know. B-Doc just seemed right to me. But my favorite, who's your favorite Eagle of all time?
Ben Hawkins.
Brian Dawkins? Or
Ben Hawkins. The wide receiver from the late 60s, early
70s. Wow. Well, I thought Benarek. I thought about that. But my favorite, and for lots of reasons, it was my age, it was everything, was Randall Cunningham.
Sure.
And he was just so exciting to watch. I'm not saying he was the best player. He was just one of my favorite players. So I'm thinking of naming the other Gormley Randall. All right?
That works. And then, what about Ultimate Weapon?
Exactly.
His nickname.
Exactly.
Ultimate Weapon. Yeah.
So, you know, but if you want, I could throw you a list of a number of horses. We could have a little contest because I got 20 to name.
Well, I'm just hearing Johnny D's got one. He says Polish Rifle.
Well, somebody, one of the guys in Airborne wanted me to call Big Dick Nick. I'm not so sure the Jockey Club would like that one. So.
They're tough. When Johnny wants one name for Jaws, we gotta look through the.
Mothers. What do we want to call the Jaws one? Just Jaws? Can we get that?
A Polish Rifle.
That's
Polish
right.
Rifle.
All right, we can do that. I know him a little bit. It'd be nice to get like a couple in this batch. Get three or four that are current. Or now, you know, I named one. I have a very good horse right now by the name of Zertz. The new company that I'm putting together, Zach and his wife Julie are part of it, Zach Ertz.
Sure.
And so I named the horse Zertz, Z-E-R-Z, and then Ertz.
So, I love it.
We ran in the race at Laurel that you win and you're into the Preakness, but it was a not win and you're out more for me at that point. But then we found out why. He has a tiny, tiny, tiny little crack. So we're giving him a month or two off. So, but he's a really good horse. I'm very excited about Zertz for the long term.
Well, one of your stake winners of recent vintage, I've been a fan of the filly that Doug has, the Iron Filly, Biddy Duke.
And I didn't name it, but I absolutely love that name. It fits her perfectly. She's a tough son of a gun, and I guess I should just let everybody know that. And she was a favorite out in California. I gotta let everybody know that. She's now on the retirement trail. She started to get a little bit of issue, and we just felt she didn't owe us anything. But the problem I got with her is, and I'd love for, I'll take any advice on it. She's little. She's little. I have dogs bigger than her. The jockey's got to, you know, if they get on, their legs drag. All right, but she just has such a big heart. And I'm trying to figure out and we're going to miss this year, but for next year, who we breed her to. And I was always told that if you breed a little horse to a big horse, that when they have the babies, I'd love to get some advice on this, they could get the retracted tendons. And that actually happened to me but what I've been told lately is that the first one won't be big, but then all the muscles and stuff expand, and you don't have to worry about that. But we want to breed her to something special because she was special. She, you know what? Last year I was very lucky when I got back in. I claimed Biddy Duke, and I also claimed a horse by the name of Fly On Angel. And Fly On Angel won a graded stake. And I claimed them both for around 40, and within 6 weeks, 8 weeks, they both won a graded stake for me. So I was really lucky and really happy about that. Fly On's doing okay, so. She was bought at the sale, and somebody.
She won, and I can't remember if we talked to Claudio Gonzalez after the Oaks. I think we did actually the Oaks win. After she won the Charlestown Oaks, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know what's funny about that? I was telling you about. I have a little bit. The Busker family's had a little bit tough time. My parents were a big part of our life. We're dysfunctional, but we're still a really close family. But my father died August 4th of 19, and then my mom died August 4th of 20. And the day we were having the memorial service for her, I couldn't go because we were having the memorial service, which was difficult in COVID, but we still had a tent. We had people there, and Clovis was there. Clovis Crane was there, and he said, "Hey, you remember, your horse is running in 10 minutes, so we got a table, we went off to the side, and about 10 or 15 of us were watching the race, and my mom, Flying On Angel, my mom brought her home, and so here was another funny story. I go to my Telebet account, and I had forgotten to load it up, and I had $3 in there, so I got to bet $3 on Flying Angel, and it went off like 9-1, I think.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, very, very fortunate. I would say in large measure because of the process that we do in claiming, you know, we got lucky. And then, of course, to have two great trainers like Doug O'Neill for Biddy and Claudio for Fly-On, you know, that's part of our process. We take from trainers that may not have the same tool set available to them for lots of reasons, and then get them to a trainer like Doug or Claudio. Claudio is such a gentleman. He's just fantastic. And so I'm very fortunate with the trainers that we do have. You know, whether it be, you know, my main go-to trainer at home, which is Tim Kreiser, who I think is the biggest undercover gem in all of racing. He's been able to run with two-year-olds for me last year, and we were able to sell them and do well. But, you know, whether it be Hugh McMahon and Jamie Ness that I have in Maryland, or, you know, even going back to my original trainer from the old days, Scotty Lake, you know, and I shouldn't have been mentioning names because now I have Joe Sharp in Kentucky. Oh, we're sending a couple of George Weaver up in New York. So
nice.
George is quite a gentleman.
He's the greatest.
So, yeah, I mean, that, the idea is, and we try to tell everybody this is kind of a team effort. So if the horse isn't working out for you, maybe sometimes we change within the portfolio. And we've had luck changing within the portfolio. You know, one program might be a little bit different and might just kick it in. A guy like Doug all the time says, you know, I can't figure this out. And we sent it east, and the horses have blossomed, just done really well. So, you know, if we can keep everybody's ego in check and everybody work as a team, and we've done it now long enough, nobody takes it personally, which is good.
Joe Besseker's with us, and you know, he's come back in a big way with two dozen purchases this week at Timonium and plenty
who's
of other
your,
active.
Who's your favorite of the ones you have the list there? Name your favorite sire on that. You know, or the sire you're most interested in. We'll have somebody name that one.
All right, and the names are coming in. They're already being sent to me. You did get a Practical Joke who looks like he's, you know, Practical Joke's going to be hit. I'll tell you who I'm interested in. This is funny, just because it's kind of, you know, it's just a little bit of a personal thing that I came to really like him. Uncle Lino is really.
I have shares in Uncle Lino, so Dave McCaffin sold me that one, and you know he's telling me this horse can go. Uncle Lino designated reality. We'll use that as one of them.
All right, and well, I want to slip in, and I don't know if you knew Sherlock at all, but
no.
Well, Gary Sherlock.
I didn't know, no.
Ask Doug. Ask okay. Doug about him. Gary Sherlock was as wonderful a horseman and person as there has been in the game in recent memory. And
okay.
We'll
name him. We'll get at the races to name him. That's
all right.
Great.
That would be an honor. Go ahead.
Tell me, because I didn't. I like the mare, and every one of these horses I saw. I was at all the Breeze shows in Maryland. All these horses breeze well. These Sterns, the Australian horse that they
the Australian.
In.
Yep.
They
absolutely
look pretty good. I think somebody should help me with that one.
We'll do the Stern Filly, and I've got a name in mind because of our friendship, Aaron Yagoda of Streit's Matza. I think the Jimmy Creed Miss Matza colt.
There you go.
We got to get him. We got to get
right,
him
we'll do
named.
Those three.
All right,
and then I'm going to let you get back to me. You can be the judge of you whittle it down to two or three and we'll do it.
You know, I had
another Jimmy Creed that did really well. They claimed it from me. I bought it for down in Florida for like 20, and I didn't know much about Jimmy Creed. Horse did really, really well for me, and then I did have a good sale on that horse, so that was good.
Now, you got some fun ones. You got a congrats filly. What's your policy, Joe, when it comes to buying a horse that's already been named? Do you change them all, or do you stick with them sometimes?
That's a good question. For the most part, I keep them. But there's a horse I bought. It was the name of the horse. I'm pretty sure, let me see here. I'm pretty sure it was my horse, it was, let me see here. I think it was number two.
Late Night Larry.
Late Night Larry. I want to change that name, but not a lot. I want to change it to Late Night at Larry's. Now, you may not be a Philly guy, but I went to St. Joe's, and the extra weight that I'm carrying started at Larry's Cheesesteaks right across the Philly.
Unbelievable.
So we would spend Late Night at Larry's, and I do want Jeff Maddie, my racing guy, who's without him, I wouldn't be able to do half of this, and he's a St. Joe guy, too. And when I said, hey, we just want to change this name a little. Late Night at Larry's. And I know Jeff spent a lot of time over there, too. So nothing like a Philly cheesesteak and nothing like a Larry's Philly cheesesteak.
Well, the stories are coming in left and right because our friend Jack Murray, Healthnetics, Jack says that the horse was named after a cab driver in Saratoga, Late Night Larry.
Well, I hope Larry, the cab driver, doesn't mind that we keep it there, but we just want to tweak it a little bit because you know what a joint is like late at night. That you
sure,
go to.
Of course.
So
of
you
course.
Know, it's just has a special part in your heart that you're killing. All right, you're killing your heart at Larry, but it's worth it. Trust me.
Well, Jack, and Jack's explaining, he named the horse for the breeder, actually, so at least Larry and Late Night still gets connected. Now it has a dual meaning, both the...
Right.
That's great. He's gone, apparently, this Larry, and is Larry's still around in Philly or no?
Larry's is, but Larry, the guy that owned it, isn't. At another time, I'll tell you 100 Larry stories, but this guy... He hired about half of St. Joe's in his lifetime. You know, people go over there, and you get to work for free cheesesteaks. I don't know what he paid you. Probably, I think one of the problems is the original Larry guy paid a lot of people under the table in the cash business. I think he had some issues there, and he finally had it. But they kept the name, and it's just a joint. You know, all right, for your bonus question of the day, who this great athlete, his favorite place in the entire world to get a cheesesteak was there at Larry's.
Well,
if you really think about it, you might be able to get it. Because think about where it's located.
St. Joe's is the tie-in, the location. I'm going to guess LeBron.
You're in the right sport.
I mean, excuse me, not LeBron. Kobe.
Kobe. The second he would get off the plane in Philly, he went to Larry's. Didn't matter what time of day, didn't matter. He was at Larry's. You could see Kobe there all the time. His pictures there and stuff, but Kobe loved Larry's. Now, you know, Philly is known for Five Pats, Geno's, you know, D'Alessandro's up in the, you know, you got Tony Luke's.
I'm a Tony Luke guy.
But he didn't care about any of that. And I know you had Tony Black on earlier, back when he was cutting weight. I don't know how. He knows plenty of these cheesesteak places. But
well, John,
Tony wrote for me 100 years ago.
Tony wrote for everybody 100 years ago. In fact, when a few years ago, Siaka, I said to Gary, you know, we were looking at a race in Philly, and he said, who do you want to ride? I said, well, you know, Tony Black. He said, Tony Black, he's got to be 100 years old.
Well, I think he has his own horse that he rode as recently as 6 months
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah. He's not retired yet. Tony won't retire. He's going to come back for a couple more yet. He wants to ride at 70.
I've never seen a jockey with one of those canes, but we'll see. It's instead of a whip. It's one of those white canes with a thing on the bottom of it. I don't know.
instead of a crop, he's got...
he married up. He's fine. He has a younger wife.
Exactly. That's what keeps him fit and young. And Kylie keeps him on his toes. And, yeah. and he's got on the other end, he's got the mother who's like almost 100.
Well, listen, what I tell you about my mom and dad, family's everything, right? Okay. So, and the beautiful part about racing is you get an extended family. I didn't know this guy, Robert Brewer, one lick that I bought this horse from. I think we're going to be friends for a long time now. He's following this horse. This horse is big. I couldn't do the job these guys do as consigners. They get, you know, racing gets a bad name. These people love these animals. They take care of them. They become part of their family, and then they got to sell them. It's like, imagine selling your dog, right? How can you do that? You know?
And I thought you were going to say, like,
to it. And he's kept me up. He wants me to keep him up to date with everything.
Well, in fact, Joe Clancy is going to join us in a little bit, and Joe's going to tell the story about because there's a tremendous story associated with Brewer and this horse. So
I don't. All I know is what he told me is that he spent more money on this horse than he's ever spent in his life, and he damn near lived with the horse for the last year.
It's apparently a great story. Yeah,
this is a May foal. I am telling you. This is one badass sumbum. He is. He just has. He has the eye. He has the look. He's a badass. I'm just telling you. I wanted to name him badass, but I wasn't really.
You did great. You did great with B-Doc, and we're going to come up with three other names for some of the other babies.
Yeah, Jimmy Creed, the Upstern, and the Uncle Lino, right?
You got it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And as soon as we do this, we'll Jeff Maddie will get working, and we'll put it out there. And we are going to change Late Night Larry to Late Night at Larry's.
Joe, you come to Saratoga. We'll see you during the summer. And
hopefully. We're good. 2-year-olds to throw at George Weaver. Who knows? Claudio, I don't care who gets them up there. I just want to run them. Like winning a race at Saratoga. Well, there's nothing like being at Saratoga. Winning a race just makes it that special.
No doubt. Let me ask you, for everybody that takes notes, what about tomorrow at Penn National, AAA Plus in that allowance in the sixth?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't think Jeff sent me the forms yet. I know the horse is doing well. That's what I know. I know the horse is doing well. You know I finished 1-2 last night at Penn. Right?
I'm pulling it up now.
Mischief, I bought, named it after my wife, Martha's Mischief, and that was probably the curse. But
that's a danger. You never do that.
I know. And then how about this? One named after my wife and one that I bought at the sale named Tinder Date. How do you think that was? Well, at least Martha beat Tinder Date. But I was afraid coming down the street. The Tinder Date was going to beat my wife. How was I going to explain that one?
That would have been bad. And that, you know, it's funny. I've got, there's a name I for years, but then I got married. I didn't reserve it, but there's a term that was taught to me by Eddie Fontaine years ago called Derby Wife. Which is the reference to, the men that would come to Louisville every year for Derby, and have a Derby wife.
Yeah.
But then I got married. I couldn't use it anymore.
So you know, you were talking about Uncle Lino, by the way. He's at Northview, and Paul Laughlin helps. He's part of our team as well. And from day one, he told me Lino was going to be really good. So he's done. He's come out. He came out of the gate pretty strong. I'm pretty excited about it. Look, the Uncle Linos I had and the Uncle Linos I watch. If you watch Maryland Racing, well, what was it? Last week he won 3 races in a day, Uncle Linos did.
Yeah, Gary Sherlock was so convinced when the stud deal came. Gary said he's going to be a good stallion, and you know, for a regional program, and you know, yesterday Josh Pons was with us. Yeah,
let's come up
That's what I'd like to do. I'd very much like to do.
You come up with a done. You come up as my buddy Paul says, done. He's Irish, done. So you come up with the name, and it's done. Send it to me, Jeff Maddie. You'll get to work, and maybe by next day, today or next day, you'll have Gary's name on the Uncle Lino.
That's tremendous. Tremendous.
Not only did I like this horse, but, you know, if you ever talk to Dave McCaffin, he told me go for this horse. He liked this. And Dave and I have a 20-year history. Dave does not lie to me. So we'll get a little bit of good shot with that one.
We'll have to play around. There was a Sherlock in 2019, so we'll play around with Gary's name.
You know,
we'll come up with something good.
You can put something in front, something in the back, whatever.
We'll come up with exactly. Yep. Joe.
Well, that'll be fun.
This was an overdue pleasure, and I there's already people clamoring for when are you going to have him back, and we're not done yet. So,
well, listen, here's the deal. I could sit and talk about my family. I could sit and talk about stocks, but if I could talk to somebody about my family, stocks, and the horses, that's a grand slam.
You got it. We'll do, and I want to hear more about the tokenization concept.
Yeah, yeah. I got to be careful what I say there, but I think we should try to make it racing so that people. I love what racehorse.com. I love people being involved and not have to deal with all of the unfortunate malarkey that comes along with it. The different states, the rulings, the this,
yep.
the that.
Yep.
You know, if somebody could just have a participation in this and enjoy it for what we all know it is. I've often said, people don't believe me, but it is true. I can get just as excited for a $5,000 claimer as I can for a stakes
yep.
race.
Exactly. Exactly. That's part of this. That's
I like to win.
Well, and it's great that you're back in a big way, and going to get lucky, Joe. I'm just thrilled. The game needs as many Joe Besickers as we can find.
Well, I think more people will come if we make the world. You know, I've often said about different parts of the horse business. If I ran my business like they ran their business, I wouldn't have a business. So if we can buff that up and get people in the right and really start I don't have to talk to you about all the issues out there. I'm sure you've talked about them plenty. But I think there's something that can happen here. I think, and I'm starting to see it. If you see the type of people at this sale, I can't say enough good things about a Terry Finley, you know, guys like that. There's lots of people. I don't want to start naming names. I can name Terry because he's, you know, I think he's doing a lot of good things for racing as well. You know, and he's such a gentleman. But you know, we get more and more on track, more and more people like this, we'll be in good shape.
You mentioned that you're close to the Wyckoffs.
Very close. Another, Kirk and I. Well, if he'll hear this at some point. I'm responsible to racing to getting Mr. Wyckoff back in. He was as a young man in college, I believe. He trained with his wife and family, and then got out of it. You know, he had a family, a business, whatever, and he was watching me. And I told him he should get back in. Well, holy moly, when he gets back in, he got to be big. So, and it's really fun for me because he and I are very, very close. We do all our families are close. So to me, when I'm watching his horses, it's like watching my horses. And you know, now I could not have not been at the Black Guide Susan. They would have had to keep a mule team away from me for that, and he wins that. But he wasn't able to get there. But
right,
I'm rooting like hell for all his horses every day, just like a lot of my buddies. So you probably know my buddy Bob Verratti. He had Independence Hall and then actually sold part of him. But yeah. It's nice when you have really good friends. You're not only rooting for your stable, but your friend's stable as well.
Well, now that you're going to get involved with George Weaver, the next thing you know, you're going to be with Randy Hill and with the Reeveses.
Randy Hill and Dean.
Dean and Patty.
Yes. Dean Reeves bought my horse, Shippy.
Yes.
What's that?
Sure, of course, Shippy. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I got to know. Now, I haven't got as close to Randy. I met him and talked to him, and he's quite a character. He's a really funny guy. Dean is like a southern gentleman, but he is slyly funny as well.
Yes, he
and
is.
We're gonna continue to do stuff together because they're just the kind of people you want to be involved with.
Well, Joe, just delighted to spend this time and get you exposed to other players and owners and shareholders, stakeholders, and I can't thank you enough. This was tremendous
fun. It was fun. I could stay on the line because the market's actually doing okay today, so I'm not tied up in knots. When you spend the kind of money I did, you can't let your stocks go down too.
No, you got to keep it. Luckily, you're not. Luckily, you're not in Bitcoin. So the
oh, I got a little of that. I got a little of everything. You know, look, I like octane. So anything that's got the stocks I buy are small and mid cap. So there are a lot. You know, I'm not buying Johnson & Johnson. If you know what I mean.
I love it. Sure. Joe Vesicker, just so much fun. We will talk to you soon. See you
all
soon.
Right.
And
thanks,
stay lucky.
Get back to me. We'll get these things named. We'll have
you
some
got
fun
it.
With it.
I'll put it out today, this afternoon. I'll put out the three sets of pedigrees. I'll pull the pages, and
wonderful.
We'll get some names.
All right, bud. Take care.
Joe, thanks so much.
Go
Joe Vesicker.
Be doc. I'll see you later.
E-A-G-L-E-S.
That's
Joe.
It, baby. We're not going to be as bad this year as people think.
I agree.
We'll be fine.
I agree. I'm
and
in the same frame
Giants
of mind.
In the mean, the Cowboys and the Eagles conspired to screw the Giants. How about that?
I'm all in.
All right, bud. Take care.
So thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Joe Vesicker, everybody. Unbelievable fun. Let's take a quick break. Only one I think we'll have time for because we got Joe Clancy. I got Seth later and Tony. I skipped over Tony. Tony, if you're listening, we'll get back to you. That one blew the turn a little, but I think everybody enjoyed. We'll put a contest out. We're going to name. I think we already have an idea that Uncle Lino we're going to name in honor of Gary Sherlock. So the other two, though, there's an Astern filly out of an English mare, and then there's the Jimmy Creed out of Miss Matza. So we'll have some fun. That's a colt. So I'll put those pedigrees up, and we'll give Joe some names. He's got he bought 23, and he's got only one name so far that we know of. That's B-Doc for the Gormley. You're going to hear about, speaking of that, Robert Brewer, as it just so happens that Joe Clancy will tell a little bit about their story, too, about the consignment of that Gormley colt. Let's take a break. Back after this at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents